So first up is Todd Rogers, who is a senior scientist in the Public Health Policy Research Program of RTI International. And he spent more than 30 years designing, conducting, and evaluating large-scale, complex public health interventions utilizing policy, systems, and environmental change approaches, and now works on a variety of evaluation projects with several divisions and offices within the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, including the National Evaluation of the Community Transformation Grant Program. In this presentation, he'll be representing OSH, RTI, and other colleagues who are involved in the development of surveillance systems to monitor tobacco product pricing and promotional activities. So, thank you, Todd.
Thanks, Tim. Good afternoon, everyone. Glad that you've given up your lunch hour for us. Thank you. And it'll be well worth it, I assure you. So there are three things that I want to present today. I want to do a little bit more background on price. Tim covered quite a bit. I want to underscore a few things. And yes, indeed, I will replicate the slide that he presented. Second, I want to talk about two methods for monitoring tobacco price, because we're in the throes of a project that's been going on for a couple of years now with funding from the Office on Smoking and Health to develop a national tobacco price surveillance system. So I want to talk about two methods that we're exploring to develop that system. So without further ado, let's talk about some of the background. Let's see if I can get this to go. Here we go. So I want to look again at this terrific slide that came to us via Gary Giovino and others, looking at the epidemiologic model of tobacco control. I spent a fascinating week in Hungary and Romania a couple of weeks ago where we're doing an NCI tobacco capacity building project with new investigators in tobacco control. And we're trying to figure out how to get their heads around modern tobacco control, because most people, when they think about tobacco control and they're starting research in tobacco control, they think of work that focuses on the agent, the tobacco products themselves, looking at the product, looking at the characteristics of the product, or they think about the host. They think about the smoker or the chewer, and there we have lots of surveillance systems and data collection methods that focus on hosts predominantly, some coming online for agent as well, and then the incidental host, the involuntary smoker. This side of the triangle seems to be very well covered, and it's very well understood by people who are new to tobacco control. It's the other side of the triangle, the environmental issues that are less well developed. The surveillance systems, their monitoring systems are less well developed in the environment, and they're certainly less well developed when it comes to vector. So a couple of years ago, OSH convened a meeting in the summer of 2010 with several dozen experts in tobacco control from around the country to speak specifically about how to monitor the tobacco industry, how to do vector surveillance, basically. And out of that meeting came a focus, not predominantly, but a prioritization of price as an important issue for development of a tobacco monitoring system. The vector, the industry, sets and manipulates tobacco product prices. And they do so using a variety of marketing techniques, prices embedded in the four P's of marketing: the product, place, price, and promotion. And in the area of price, we want to also address things, the actions that the industry is doing to thwart price increases, such as Tim mentioned, their actions to counter excise tax. And in keeping with the prediction, here is the slide that shows the elasticity, the relationship between price and, here in this case, it's prevalence, but it could be consumption. Tim showed a consumption slide. And generally, across all economies, environments, nationally and internationally, you find generally the same relationship of an elasticity of somewhere between -0.2 to -0.4, where a 2 to 4% increase, a 10% increase in price corresponds to a 2 to 4% decrease in use and consumption. And I'll allow our resident economist here to to confirm that when he gets the podium. Now, the industry manipulates price through a lot of different ways, a lot of different mechanisms. They use pull and push strategies. The pull strategies, as Tim mentioned, were things like price discounting, adding coupons to the marketing, to their marketing mix, or two-for-one promotions, or gifts with purchase, the so-called retail value added. They also do push strategies. They aggressively incentivize retail sales practices through volume discounts, merchandising payments, so-called slotting fees, and other things like that. We have a hard time keeping our finger on this because the existing price surveillance system that we have in this country is periodic at best. It's dated. The information comes out well after the actual activities of the industry, and we really need to do something that's more active and sensitive to the actualities that are on the ground. So there are many reasons why to do the price monitoring to determine the scope and scale of the problem, which we don't know fully across the board, to understand variations in price and price promotion, variations by geography, by special targeting. If we can have an ongoing surveillance system, we might be able to use it to anticipate industry actions. And certainly the surveillance system can be linked to evaluation of price-related policy solutions. And this is a lovely slide that shows how surveillance efforts contribute to program planning and evaluation. This is borrowed from Remington and Goodman's work from the late 90s. And it starts with data collection in the bottom here in of the surveillance side, through data analysis and interpretation. The information dissemination contributes to program planning. Programs are implemented, they're evaluated, and the program evaluation informs future surveillance efforts. So what we're talking about is what can we do here on price surveillance to inform people who are concerned about this and who want to do something about it, want to intervene in some way. And that's where we're starting. And so as a result of the 2010 Tobacco Industry Monitoring Meeting, the Office on Smoking and Health prioritized the development of a national tobacco price surveillance system. And over the past couple of years, we've developed some very specific criteria as to what should go into such a system. And I'll go over them very briefly here and then apply these criteria to a couple of different methods that we're exploring to address the issue. So optimal elements for such a system would be collection of data that allows us to keep track of not only the unit price, the average price of a given pack of cigarettes, but to do that by brand and by specific category, smoking tobacco, non-combustibles, all the different kinds of tobacco products, and also to get a handle on volume, not just the price, but it would be nice to have volume and price as well. And to be able to break this out by channels, that is the industry term, a marketing term of channel, be it convenience stores or food stores, drugs, mass merchandisers, and so on, to see if there's something that could help program and policy implementers to address the issue. And we also need to pay attention to price promotions and new product distribution, the things that the industry is doing to counter any excise tax increases or other tobacco control efforts. We want to be sure that we can have the system cover the entire U.S., that we can get data nationally to get a national snapshot. But OSHA's primary constituency are states and state health departments and state tobacco control programs. So an important criterion for us in developing the system is can we get accurate estimates at the state level for these? And that turns out to be pretty challenging. So state-specific measures are really important. And to do them well is very difficult, to get them with a sufficient precision. Finally, we don't want to have a report that hits our desk in April of a year that talks about something that happened 2.5 years previously. That's the kind of the status quo. What the industry did 2.5 years ago has great historic meaning, and it's interesting and it's important. Just as the document research contributes to this, it is not a surveillance system of the kind that will contribute to policy development program planning and evaluation. So we need something that provides us with data on a more regular periodic interval. And we've set a standard of that we would like to have data on price at the various levels that I just described, at least quarterly going throughout the year, and with a rapid turnaround. So that would be, a report could be on Tim's desk, for example, in July of a year, reporting at no later, you know, something no later than the first quarter of that previous year, hopefully something even faster than that. And that's kind of the standard we're setting. And that the system needs to be able to be maintained over time. There's not unlimited money in, despite the tax that's going to the federal government, there's not unlimited money to do this. It needs to be sustainable. It needs to be done with a high quality, and it needs to be able to be done if there are any kind of gyrations in the system. It has to be robust, to be stable. So where do we get such data? Well, there are a number of different sources of tobacco price monitoring data. Here are five. I'm not going to speak of the first three, the archival sources such as the Consumer Price Index, or the tax burden of tobacco reports, or population surveys. Zhidong is going to be addressing some of those in his presentation. I'm instead going to focus on the latter two, because these two, retail scanner data and in-store observations, have the greatest likelihood of meeting the criteria that we've set for a national price surveillance system. And I'm going to speak a little bit more about scanner data and a little less about in-store observations. Lisa will be speaking more about the latter. So, let's talk a little bit about retail scanner data. And some folks in the audience here know a fair bit about this. Some of you may never have heard of retail scanner data. But in a nutshell, retail scanner data are derived from the UPC, or the universal product codes that are on products that are scanned at the point of sale. The data are collected and compiled by at least two commercial vendors who I can't name. But you can purchase data from these unnamed commercial vendors, and you can talk to me later about who they are. Off-the-shelf data are actually not that out of reach, the cost to obtain off-the-shelf data, kind of their standard reports. They're not too expensive, but they vary in their ability to cover the U.S., and I'll show you what I mean by this, depending upon the vendor. For example, vendor A, unnamed vendor A, has 52 DMAs, or designated market areas, throughout the country. And as you'll see, if you can, you'll see that these are centered around metropolitan areas. And they they're generally pretty large. They contain about 30 counties, each DMA, about 1.3 million people. The DMAs that this vendor has, as do all vendors, vary. The number of DMAs vary by the channel. For example, For food stores, this vendor has 52 DMAs throughout the U.S. For convenience stores, 25 DMAs. For drug stores, 10 DMAs. For a combination of the food, drug, mass merchandisers, they have 11. Now, an important exclusion is Walmart. Currently, Walmart is not included in this vendor's data set, but they have developed a capability of including Walmart, and that's coming online. You're aware of that, yes, this year, later this year. So we have another vendor, Vendor B. Vendor B has a similar mix of DMAs. Although Vendor B has a greater number, a sheer number of DMAs, Vendor A covers more people. 75% of the U.S. is covered by the DMAs of Vendor A. Okay. But what you'll notice here in this slide and in the previous one is that the DMAs cut across state lines. Right? So that's Kansas City DMA. There's the St. Louis DMA. And they cut across state lines. So that's a pretty challenging thing when you're trying to develop a surveillance system that has state-specific data, when these DMAs cut across state lines and they can't disentangle that using their standard off-the-shelf product. That's a major challenge. And we'll get to that in a moment. So what are the data elements? Typically, this is what you get from a vendor. You get sales volume, total dollars for an item, brand by each brand, by product type, by package type, and the presence of promotion. You get it down to the UPC level. You get an enormous fire hose of data. It's an enormous amount of data, typically in a 13-week dump, that requires some expertise in how to handle. You get just about everything you need to meet the specifications, and including the presence of promotions, that is manufactured promotions, the promoted products from the manufacturer that's pushed by the manufacturer. And you get all these different categories, cigarettes, smokeless, cigars, other tobacco products, and you can calculate a mean price per unit as dollar sales divided by unit sales. Very simple. That's how you can get it down to the brand level. The two vendors, here's the mix of categories and detail and channels and geographic areas, very, very similar. The one big difference, and these are their standard off-the-shelf products that just anybody can go and purchase. The big difference is vendor B does not include cigars in their standard off-the-shelf product. You have to pay extra to get cigars. But basically, they're the same. These two vendors are basically the same. So what do you get from these data, this fire hose? If you were to look at it and you were to take, and as we at RTI, we have these data going back to 1994 from one of the vendors. And this is the average pack price of a leading cigarette brand. Visualize what the leading cigarette brand is. In supermarkets in all DMAs in the U.S. during this period of 94 to 2011, you see really interesting things. And the primary purpose of this kind of system is to monitor trends, and what you're seeing is trends, right? You see that, and you can see also where the impact of certain policy comes into play. You know, what happened in 1998? MSA, right, Master Settlement Agreement. What happened in 2009?
Federal
S-CHIP. The federal excise tax. You can see the impact of those big policy effects across all DMAs in the supermarkets for the leading cigarette brand. Do anything, any brand, any product, any channel, you'll see the same, basically the same mix. The data can also be used to model differential price changes in specific DMAs. This, for example, I just picked some of the bigger DMAs in the country, or well, the major cities, major metropolitan areas, and looked at just some of the looked at leading cigarette brand during that same period, 94 to 2010, and just show you, for example, I highlighted in red and green, red in New York, green Seattle, where New York and Seattle start separating from some of the others, and this is effect of their excise tax and their policy effects being played out, and you can see how New York differs so much from some of these others. The interesting and complicated issue that we're dealing with now and how to address this if we're trying to provide Tim with his state-specific report is what happens when you get this kind of situation. This is four DMAs all within the state of Texas, all under the same excise tax regime. And the separation is pretty significant in the later years. Now, this is possibly due to industry marketing efforts, I would say, targeted specifically to DMAs. This is the San Antonio DMA. Look at the difference. This is almost a twofold difference in pack price across those DMAs within one state. So if we're going to be doing a state-specific estimate, we need to also account for this within-state variability. Interesting and challenging. So let's just quickly summarize scanner data. You can monitor price trends, promotions, market share, national DMA levels. You've got prices information available on thousands of products in all these retail channels. They're described in excruciating detail at the UPC level. They're reported in weekly increments. You get dumps typically quarterly. And the standard data reports are relatively inexpensive. However, they're not well suited for making state-level estimates, the standard reports. You can, in fact, commission customized data sets, and that's what we're in the middle of doing. We've commissioned customized data sets to check whether or not we can do this and how much coverage we can get in the U.S. using customized data sets, using different methodologies. Only certain types of retail promotions are captured. Anything that's done at the store level that's not pushed through from the manufacturers, those promotions you're not going to capture. It's just not going to happen. The data are cumbersome and difficult to handle and properly, and the information is proprietary. If we have a contract with the provider, with the vendor, I can't pass the data on to anyone else. I can analyze the data on behalf of OSH, but we can't even give it to OSH without a third-party agreement or some other kinds of provisions. And it's not fully transparent how they do this. We're not really sure exactly 100% how they collect these data. Okay, so quickly, in-store observation. Lisa's going to be speaking a lot about this. Widely conducted, also can be used to monitor trends, but it's also interesting that we can get at things other than price. You can get things about advertisements and compliance with the retailers with various laws, and you can look at things at the geography smaller than DMAs. And we have some issues about how price-related measures are being developed and validated. So I'm not going to go into any detail here. You can download this from the APHA website, a comparison of different price-related measures across different retail observation studies, including those done by lots of people in the room here. And Lisa will be talking about a new measure that she's been working on as well in her presentation. Advantages, you can obtain unique data. A unique data not captured by other sources. The sampling frame is adjustable, which is really something great that you can't do with scanner data. You can go down to a block level. You can go to a city. You can go to a whole state. You can adjust the sampling frame. And you can link it to other data. Really importantly, you can link it to ecological data about the geography, about the other store-level indicators, and you can even link it to individual-level indicators. At least his most effective work has been to linking it to survey data with youth especially. There are disadvantages. It's expensive, labor, time-intensive. You have to have really good, high-quality data collection people. You have to have people on top of them. Quality assurance is critical. There's some resistance by retailers, but that's minimal. And it's not efficient. If you're just tracking price, you don't want to just do this for tracking price. There are a lot of other things you need to collect. So let me just briefly end with a comparison of the two approaches, because we're looking at these two and saying, you know, well, what should we go with? You know, how should we do this? And, you know, to cut to the chase, we're probably going to need a combination. We're probably going to need both of these methods to complement one another for different purposes. So in this case, we're looking at scanner data in the blue over the period 2004 to 2010 that are collected in New York State, in DMAs within New York State, and we're mapping it to data collected by the Retail Advertising Tobacco Survey that's done by RTI on behalf of the New York Tobacco Control Program. It's been done for about 10 years in New York State. So we're comparing these data, and you can see that the RATS data are consistently higher, the observed in-store observations consistently higher than the scanner data. The RATS people going in are looking at the posted sale price. What's the sale price of the product? We're comparing it, this leading cigarette brand, to the DMA data of stores in that DMA, only stores in those DMAs. Same thing here in the Albany DMA. If you pick one DMA, you get differences in the pricing consistently higher in the observed. And again, here is in convenience stores in New York City, just convenience stores, the leading cigarette brand, scanner data across these 3 years compared to RATS data. So what do you think is going on? What's the difference? Why is the observed price lower than the scanner price? Yeah, this likely to be a huge portion of that is promotion. It's also that the scanner data are sales weighted. You're getting a lot of sales. You're getting the data pushed by the products that are sold more. That's affecting the price. And it turns out the products that are sold more also, they're the ones, they're promoting those. They're promoting the premium brands. It's not the GPC, sorry. It's not the off brands that are being promoted as much. So, and if you look at premium A, premium B, premium C, if you look at these major brands, you'll see that this differential holds up. This is in Los Angeles using data that I believe Lisa collected on behalf of the California Tobacco Program compared to scanner data for the LA DMA in two quarters of 2008. Again, consistency across, especially the premium brands, less so in the low-cost brands because you don't have as much of that couponing going on there. So what do we have here? We've got two different approaches. We have retail scanner approaches. We have in-store observation approaches. And they compare nicely on a variety of features that we're using to apply, criteria we're using to apply to whether they should be a part of a national surveillance system. The validity, reliability of price measures is pending, and Lisa will talk about that too. Price promotion measures, both. Sales volume data for scanner. Sampling possible at the national level, both. Sampling possible at state level is pending. We will see whether we have the data sets. We're trying to see whether they are valid or not at the state level. And high-frequency data collection is feasible using scanner, less so using observational. You can't easily link scanner data and individual level data, whereas you can more readily do that at POS with retail in-store observation. And you can link very nicely with other data, geographic information and so on for the in-store, where you can't in scanner. Relative costs are moderate for both. For a national data collection, the costs are pretty high for retail. Summary, commercial data may be customized, we're working on that, sufficiently to meet OSHA specifications for a national tobacco price monitoring system. Several challenges need to be addressed. Not all states will be covered. We're thinking it'll probably be no more than 85% of states will have adequate coverage, maybe up to 90%. The cost to maintain a scanners-based system is not insignificant. And we need to, arguing that in addition to the scanner data, we need to continue developing standardized retail observational protocols to do this kind of work in areas smaller than, geographically smaller than DMAs. So I want to acknowledge a bunch of colleagues from RTI, OSHA, and the California Tobacco Program, and specifically people named here, and our funding so provided by the Office on Smoking and Health. And thank you. If you have any information, please don't hesitate to email. Thanks.